The Book Nook on WYSO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCumis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Christine Wentz. She joins us on the telephone in Wisconsin, and she's got a new book out. It's called Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Vic.
We have very well-informed listeners in public radio, but I'm going to guess there are a few out there who are not familiar with The Onion, amazingly. Maybe they've heard of it, but they don't know what it is. And I'm sure we got plenty out there going, The Onion? I know what The Onion is. So what is The Onion?
The Onion is a satirical news source that began as a physical newspaper, a free weekly newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin in 1988. And since then, as I describe in the book, it's gone through various permutations. It went online, was one of the first comedy websites in 1996, which was what made it famous. And since then, it's done a video called Onion News Network. That was in the 2010s. It published a physical newspaper through 2013 and then went online for a few years. And now recently, new owners just brought back the physical newspaper, which is now available as on a monthly subscription. But the Onion's also, there's Onion Radio News, there's been podcasts, they did a pretend nature show, they've done all kinds of things. But the focus is that it's always been a very straight parody of news and media.
Wouldn't it be apt to say that it was fake news before there was fake news?
Yeah. And one of the three things that made me want to write the book was, which was back in 2017, was when everybody suddenly started talking about bad fake news. And I had just recently moved back to Madison from the East Coast, and that had gotten me, you know, thinking about my college days when I was on the original staff of The Onion. Anyway, and so I, you know, became curious about, you know, the Onion's role as news satire, which is good fake news, and then maybe what all those folks thought about everything that was happening now with other forms of bad fake news. So,
Christine Wentz joins us. Her new book is Funny Because It's True. And I have one other kind of important question, and that is this a parody of a history of the Onion?
No, it's not. It's like a very serious history. I did graduate work in history, actually, and so I really wanted it to be like a real history book. So I placed the Onion's story in the history of news and media since the 80s. So that's kind of sprinkled throughout. However, I also have a background in public radio myself, as well as I was also the editor of Seattle's alternative weekly, The Stranger, back in the early 90s. So I'm kind of mixing together all of those things in my kind of approach to the topic. So although it's, you know, there's stuff in there I talked to media scholars when I was people who work on the history of news satire and that sort of thing. That's part of the background of the book, but I definitely wrote it to be something that, you know, that was for a broader audience. So all of that stuff is kind of mixed together.
I'm kidding about it being a parody.
Yeah.
But I thought it had to be asked, and I read the book, and I think it's really tremendous. You go into amazing depth. The book is Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. It just came out. Christine Wentz wrote it, and she joins us on the telephone in Wisconsin, where it all began. Tell us how you got your gig with The Onion and what it was like back in those days.
Yeah, well, The Onion was started by someone I had met in the dorms at UW-Madison, a guy named Tim Keck. And he and his friend Chris Johnson founded The Onion basically because they were sophomores in college and they were running out of money and they wanted to find a way to make money without getting a regular job. Although The Onion ended up being far more work than, you know, just working at a coffee shop or something. But Tim is an interesting guy because he actually comes from a Chicago area newspaper family. His dad was the president of the Chicago Area Newspaper Association. His mom was an investigative reporter. And so he grew up in a newspaper-saturated environment, which is why starting a newspaper seemed like the logical thing for him to do. But we were friends, and we were even roommates for a little while. And, you know, he knew I was a writer and, you know, took art classes and stuff like that. So he asked me and some other friends to help him get it going, and that's how it got going. I mean, I think I was 19, you know, when he first told me about the idea, and then we started it up that fall. So yeah, I was there from that the very first issue, and then I left before The Onion got famous. I was only there for a couple of years, and then I went on to other things. But I stayed in touch with a few of the folks that did end up, you know, helping to take it on to a higher level, and so that's how I got involved. And it was, at that time, it's a bunch of college students, right? And we're sort of doing this in our spare time in between classes. So, you know, your classic, it was operated out of a dumpy student apartment, and you know, there's always people coming in and out, and all kinds of crazy things happening because, you know, we're just making up stories and putting them in a newspaper, and it's really popular, which, you know, so it was fun. It was just fun and interesting and a weird thing to do when you were 20 years old.
I've been aware of The Onion all these years, and I've always been amused by the fact that quite often the headlines, you read them and you go, oh, did that really happen? Is that really true? Because they just have this approach where they're very matter of fact, and it's believable. And in a lot of weird ways, the headlines seem to actually be prescient. They seem to come true. I looked at the Onion feed yesterday and it had a headline, and it said, Pete Hegseth blows into breathalyzer to unlock phone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, The Onion they're in a mode these days. They're in a mode of where they sort of respond to current events. That's not what The Onion did for like a lot of the 90s because it was a weekly newspaper. But yeah, I actually think of The Onion in a really literary way. I have a background in English literature as well. And when you're a very, I don't know, they definitely have a knack to sort of describe reality. And there's something about doing that that also ends up almost sort of predicting the future sometimes too, you know? So it's kind of like the way like a science fiction writer, they're actually writing about now, you know, but it sometimes seems like something that is predicting the future. So, yeah.
Well, this is quite a history, and it's called Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. Christine Wentz wrote it. I was not surprised to find that there's been a lot of money made from The Onion, but most of the people making the money have not been the writers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, there's always a classic sort of art versus commerce thing, and The Onion has also... As it's satirizing media, it sort of had to go through all the changes that real media went through. And, you know, when they ended up having corporate owners, and like I think private equity firm owned The Onion with a bunch of other media entities in the 2010s. You know, in that situation, The Onion, it started out as basically a small business, and then it went on to become an investment, basically, for about 10, 15 years. And that just changes the business side dynamic. It changes the relationship between the writers and the business side. And it just, the sort of mission from a money-making point of view goes beyond, you know, for a long time, it was just like, we're going to keep the lights on, we're going to pay the writers, and you guys do whatever you want. And then later, it becomes a thing where like, no, we have to actually get a big return on our investment for these, you know, handful of people who are shareholders, and it just creates a different situation. But The Onion's definitely not unique in that. I think a lot of media entities have had to deal with similar problems.
Well, working in public radio, it's always been important to me to have that firewall between the business side and the creative side. And this was a battle that was fought at The Onion as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You take us through the years, and as they become bigger and more absorbed into the fabric of the media, we have a lot of situations here where these poor overworked writers get set up to do things, to work on projects like these books that they put out. This is just brutal. I can't believe how productive these writers have been over the years. It's incredible.
Yeah. I gained so much respect for the Onion's process. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, people are like, oh, it's funny. It's just jokes. It's like not something to be taken all that seriously. But you know, the people who work there took their work extremely seriously, you know, even though they're doing comedy. And they, you know, the Onion kind of satire writing process is like this sort of, you know, beautifully kind of collectively figured out thing over the years, you know. But no, I mean, the amount of work and research and fact checking, you know, that sounds funny, but the Onion has always had very, very high standards for that kind of thing in their work. And I think that's, you know, it's one of the reasons why the Onion has lasted as long as it has, you know. It's never been something that was just kind of tossed off, you know. I mean, I'm sure there's been times that, you know, especially in the early years when we were writing stuff at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning to go to the printer 2 hours later. I think there probably was some stuff that was pretty tossed off. But you know, they have, the Onion has a ton of integrity in their process. And I think that comes through. But yeah, no, enormous, enormous amounts of work went into this stuff. And even like the video, I describe how the same thing happened with Onion News Network when they were making these just amazing, you know, cable news parody videos in the 2010s, just the amount of effort that went into that was pretty incredible. So, yeah.
Well, I was impressed by your access. You were able to interview so many people, and you,
yeah,
you go through all these people that have worked there and how some of them kept coming back and leaving and coming back, and just an amazing variety of voices and people. And you apparently were able to interview quite a few of them. And we need to take a quick break here, but we'll continue with the Book Nook. My guest is Christine Wentz, and her new book is Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. Stay tuned. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, community-owned public radio for curious listeners, and I've been joined by Christine Wentz. Her book is Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. You mentioned that you've also been involved in radio. I have fond memories of listening to a station out of Madison called WORT online. What a great station.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I had a show, music show there, a late-night music show in the early 90s, yeah.
I probably heard it. What kind of stuff did you play on your show?
It was called Emulsion, and it was this eclectic mix of stuff you wouldn't think would go together, but then it goes together. I did everything from kind of minimalist stuff, you know, Lamont Young and Steve Reich, you know, Meredith Monk mixed in with like Big Black and you know, some spoken word stuff occasionally and some traditional folk music, threw a little medieval music in there. Like basically it was just like my record collection along with what I found at WORT. But I don't know. There's a vibe that's similar in a lot of that kind of, when I was talking just this second, I was like, it's almost like a spiritual vibe that kind of connected a lot of the, I haven't really thought about that in a long time, but if it felt like there was some kind of emotional connection between the different kinds of music, even though they might come from really different genres, then I would play it. And I was really fascinated by what happens when you juxtapose something very quiet next to something very, you know, loud and intense, and kind of what that's like. So I would play around with that on the show.
I love it. Well, I came into radio as a music DJ, and I used to do late night shows, and there's something really special about being on the air in the middle of the night and the people that are out there listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because sometimes people, you know, they would call in or, you know, make requests or, you know, and it was it's like 1:30 in the morning and you're talking and like, is anybody listening to this? You know? But then, you know, you hear somebody ask you about it later it was great. I enjoyed it a lot.
I see, according to your bio, that you have a particular interest in prairies. I love that.
Yeah.
What do you do?
When I came back to Wisconsin, one of the reasons I moved back is I wanted to get more connected with my, you know, the nature that I grew up in. I grew up in rural Spring Green, Wisconsin, which is, people might know that area is associated with Frank Lloyd Wright's Taliesin and American Players Theater is out there too, but it's a really beautiful area in the Driftless region of Wisconsin, which I know I'm biased, but it is one of the most beautiful places in the world, and I've been to a lot of places now, and I can say that. But when I came back, I did a master naturalist training in prairie restoration, and then I did a training at the UW Arboretum as well. And so now I focus on, there's a big natural area near my house that's actually owned by the city, and so I'm working with, as a volunteer, with people in the city to kind of restore some prairie area, and there's some wood stuff. And I just really, there's something about the long-term aspect of doing this kind of gardening, as it were, that I really like. You know, like I planted some stuff that might not even germinate for 3 or 4 years. You know, it just, it's really a long-term project. It's a different kind of way of thinking about plants and your relationship with them. And it's just, you know, and I've always been a nature person, but I didn't know actually that much about plants. And now I'm like, wow, plants are the coolest thing ever. They're completely fascinating, and the way they work together. And I love insects, and, you know, so I just really, that's just like my mental health activity. You know, I just love, you know, planting. I was just planting a million seeds just for my regular yard garden, you know, the other day. That's just something that really makes me happy.
Mm. Christine Wentz joins us. Her new book is Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. She joins us from the Driftless region, I assume, in Wisconsin. And yeah. Christine, the thing that always struck me about the Onion, as I've seen their headlines and their articles over the years, is I've always wondered if they had a lot of concern about litigation. You mentioned fact-checking and how thorough they were with fact-checking. And
yeah.
I thought, well, gosh, I bet they have good lawyers. And you tell the story in your book about how they got an attorney. And he's one of my favorite people that you have in the book, because this guy was an amazing attorney. And the story of how he came to help out the people at the Onion is so funny, because originally he contacted them because he was getting ready to sue them over something. And when you describe this, you talk about this place in Madison that was a hamburger place, and they were using the image of Ginger Rogers in one of their ads. Ads are a big part of the Onions, particularly in the early days. That's how they survived. Yeah. And so Ginger Rogers never licensed her image. So this attorney saw this, and he contacted them. And the thing that got me about this anecdote was that I grew up in Des Moines, and when I was in high school, there was this hippy-dippy, really freaky kind of place where we'd go to shop. They sold, like, clothes from India and incense and stuff.
Oh,
and,
sure, yeah.
And on the front of the shop, they had old dolls and tubas attached to the wall. And the guy that owned it, he also was involved with a bar. He called the bar So's Your Mother. And his store was called Dottie Dumplings Dowry.
Oh, really?
And it was the same guy, Jeff Stanley, the same guy who had the hamburger place. I remember him. He was a total nut.
That's so funny.
Tell us how they got this lawyer and the story behind the lawsuits and how he staved them off.
Yeah, well, I mean, the story goes that this guy, Ken Artis, came in and went through all the Onions stacks of old newspapers trying to find this ad, and supposedly could not find the ad, but he also was an Onion fan, and, you know, and he sort of realized that although he was in his 40s, he had only gotten his law degree a few years earlier, and so he was looking for clients and looking for stuff to do, decided to help them out as their pro bono attorney, and eventually they paid him like $75 a week or something. And he really, really helped them, because people have tried to sue the Onion like probably a zillion times, you know, and he really got them out of some jams, you know, early on that were really, that was really, really important. He was an extremely persuasive speaker, and really appeared to be quite good at just basically getting on the phone and talking with people who were furious with the Onion, and somehow getting them to not be furious anymore and actually liking the Onion afterwards. So he seemed to be good at that. But I know I love that story, because, you know, it's like a lawyer who literally walked in off the street became their lawyer. But that was the way the Onion did a lot of stuff in those days. So there was a lot of kind of chance and kind of synchronous stuff that would happen, and that was one of them.
He was capable of turning someone who was potentially going to sue them into an advertiser.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, yeah.
That's great. It's funny because it's true. It's the history of The Onion, written by Christine Wentz, who joins us on the telephone in Wisconsin. Some of these people that go in and out of the story, one of them in particular is a guy who was very involved at the beginning, and he was very involved recently, and he keeps popping back up. Was his name Tim?
Are you talking about Scott Dickers?
Scott Dickers.
Yeah.
I assume that you were able to interview him.
I did, yeah.
This is a guy, he went from being kind of heroic to being kind of loathed.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. Yeah, that's someone that I actually knew back in the day. So that was a weird experience for me. In fact, one of the reasons I actually wanted to write the book is because I discovered that there was a lot of incorrect material out there in the world that seemed to be coming from that source. And I was like, wait a minute, this is not right. You know, this is not how I remember it. You know, I double checked many, many things, but yeah, it's been a weird situation. Yeah. And uncomfortable at times for sure.
So you're saying Scott was propagating some erroneous information maybe?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. About certain things. I think it's always a question, you know, is this just how he remembers it, you know? But yeah, anyway, I'm not going to talk about that too much, but it was just a very strange situation. And it was, you know, and this was like during the pandemic, there's other things that are happening. And so it was just very odd to even just as a writer and journalist and historian to realize that someone that I was hoping could be, you know, like a really good source, like, oh, okay, I guess like I have to kind of check stuff more than I anticipated here. So that was a strange kind of process just as a writer, you know?
Well, I think you did very well. And I love the fact that you go over the whole history and we get to make up our own minds about what we think about the whole enterprise. And I think one of the most dramatic periods for them was when they moved from Madison to New York City. This is amazing.
Yeah. They went through this whole rigmarole. So this is the late 90s dot-com boom, right? And so The Onion went through this period. They were really actually trying to sell out. You know, they really wanted to sell themselves and make some money and, you know, finally get some financial reward for all the incredible work they've been doing over the past 10 years. So this is sort of like when The Onion is at its peak of its kind of early wave of creativity. And then that all falls through after the dot-com bubble burst, and they almost were bought by Comedy Central, and that died. That deal crashed and burned during this period, and so they moved to New York City anyway, just on their own mojo, you know. And this is just the editorial staff, the business staff, and the AV Club, which is like the arts and entertainment sort of real part of The Onion, arts and entertainment reviews. They stayed behind. So it's just the writers, you know, they want to be with other comedy people. They want to maybe get movie deals or book deals and, you know, basically finally have comedy peers after being in Madison all this time. And so they move in early 2001. At this time, The Onion is in print in a lot of different cities. So they're getting ready to do their first print edition in New York City. And the first print edition in New York City is scheduled for that fall on September 16th, 2001. And so, you know, obviously something really significant happened about a week before. And so The Onion's 9/11 issue, which is one of their most famous, becomes their first print edition in New York City.
That is quite a story. I did a little amateur market research this morning when I was on my way in, and I ran into a guy I know who grew up in Boulder. And I was just curious. I said, are you familiar with The Onion? He goes, oh, yeah. He says, when we were in high school, we would, every week when it came out, we'd run over to this coffee shop that had it, and we'd go over there, and we'd laugh and laugh, and we just thought we were so smart reading The Onion.
The Boulder-Denver edition of The Onion, that actually was one of the first kind of branch offices, and they did really well out there, yeah.
And we have a lot of writers who came through The Onion who went on to shape some big comedy enterprises. Tell us about this.
Yeah, well, probably the first was Ben Carlin, who was an Onion editor who became Jon Stewart's head writer on Jon Stewart's Daily Show when he took over in 1999, I think. So an Onion person was really instrumental in making the Daily Show what it became in the early 2000s. And then spinning off from that, Ben Carlin and Rich Dom, who was another Onion editor and an old friend of mine, they created the Colbert Report. They were producers, and I think Rich was the head writer on the Colbert Report. So that was just the beginning. And then now these days, the Onion is almost like a sort of farm team or whatever for like late night comedy writing people. There are many, many people who've written for the Onion in the past 10, 15 years or so who have gone on to basically all the kind of late night talk shows, you know, including Saturday Night Live. And then a lot of people have also gone on to Hollywood to write for TV and film and all kinds of things. So the Onion has definitely become like a stepping stone to careers in kind of comedy and entertainment writing. I mean, it wasn't like that at all. That's one of the stories in the book, is how for the original sort of Gen X kind of slacker, you know, stereotype staff in the 1990s, definitely when those folks started doing it, a lot of those people were not thinking about it in terms of, you know, I'm going to make this into a, you know, Hollywood career. Like, nobody was thinking that. This was coming from a very different group of people. But the Onion these days is much more connected to those worlds than it was back in the day. So
a recurring theme throughout the book is these young writers, potential writers, who somehow get an opportunity to write for the Onion. Maybe they were remote and they were writing headlines, or mm-hmm. maybe they just stumbled into the office. And you have all these stories about these young writers and how they go into these writer meetings and just be in awe that they were actually there with their writing heroes.
Yeah. It was really fun to, you know, I originally conceived of the project as I was just going to end with the 9/11 issue. But then I started talking to like the next generation of writers, the millennial writers. I'm from the Gen X group. And it was just so amazing to me to meet these younger people that had grown up in high, you know, they were reading The Onion in high school, and they just loved it. And they were, you know, like, that was their life goal was to become an Onion writer, right? Like, at that young age. And it was just so interesting and fun to kind of see the Onion story through the eyes of the next generations, you know? So that ended up being one of my favorite parts of writing the book, because this is something that I knew absolutely zero about when I started the project. So there's a sort of process of like discovery that I went through as I was doing the story, and as I was just researching it, that really actually helped me write it, because it was like, wow, and this next cool thing happened, you know, look at this weird, interesting, you know, subplot or whatever, so that was really fun.
We are peeling back the layers of the onion, trying to find out if there's anything inside it, and there definitely is. And I've been joined by Christine Wentz. She's written a history of it. It's called Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. And we'll continue our conversation right after this. You are listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I've been joined on the telephone in Wisconsin by Christine Wentz. Her book is Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. And it's kind of a funny story, actually, how this interview came about, because this was a referral, and I have a story here that is one of the strangest stories in my history of interviewing writers over the last 30 years. I occasionally sell record albums on eBay. And so I had some records listed a few years ago, and one of them was a 12-inch single by a band on Wax Trax, a label out of Chicago. And I was selling this, and nobody wanted it. And I kept lowering the price, and nobody wanted it. And finally, I just closed the listing out. And a couple weeks later, I get a message through eBay from some guy, and he's like, yeah, you still got that record? I'm interested in that record. And so we started corresponding through eBay, and I thought, this is an interesting guy. I wonder what his deal is. And I started chatting with him on eBay messaging, and he says, yeah, he says, I've written some books. And I went, whoa, you've written books? And next thing I know, he says, yeah, he says, you go to do a radio show, you interview authors, well, let me send you my books. And so that's how I met Joe Garden.
That's perfect. That's a perfect Joe Garden story. Yeah, for sure.
What a guy. Tell us about Joe Garden, because he's the one who contacted you and said, you need to talk to Vic.
Yeah. Joe Garden was one of the people that was like this generation, the people that, you know, we were the same age, basically. We actually grew up not far from each other in rural Wisconsin. But I didn't know him. And there was this group of people that came right after me at The Onion whose names I had heard a million times, and they had heard my name, but I never actually met them. And so through the process of this book, I met Joe Garden and a bunch of other people who were the 90s writing staff that really made The Onion what it was. Joe, for people who remember, there used to be these columns in The Onion, and one of them was written by a guy named Jim Anschauer, and Joe was the guy who wrote the Jim Anschauer column, as well as a bunch of other things. But Joe is quite the character, as you will find out when you read the book, and Joe is just also a really great guy. So it's been really fun to get to know him and, you know, become friends with him as this project went on. So, yeah, and I was talking to Joe about, I need to help, need to get the word out about the book. And he said, you should talk to this guy named Vic in Ohio. I said, sure, that sounds great. So that's how that happened.
I love that. And, of course, I found out some interesting things about Joe in your book. For one thing, I didn't know he was a nudist.
Yeah, that kind of went away once The Onion started getting interns in New York. But, Joe definitely has an interesting background, for sure.
And in New York, if you wanted a soft drink or you needed something to eat, Joe would make you something in his office.
Yeah. Joe was running a little bodega out of his office called Joe's Cold Beverages, which was just legendary among the office staff. So he would sell Clif bars and gum and stuff, but he'd also bring in like a little hot pot and a grill and make grilled cheese sandwiches and tomato soup. And he would send out a all staff email saying what the day's specials were. And I guess sometimes people would come from other offices in the building to The Onion's office to get a grilled cheese sandwich too. So Joe is just an absolute character. Yeah.
I love that. It's funny because it's true. Christine Wentz wrote it. It's how The Onion created modern American news satire. And he's one of the writers who came out of Madison when they made the big move to New York. And then let's talk about what happened to the New York office. And Joe's one of the ones who said, no, I'm not leaving.
Yeah. So at this point, The Onion had their business office was located in Chicago and the editorial office was in New York, which, from a business perspective, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You're like, why are we paying rent in two places? But the business office decided that they were going to consolidate and move everybody to Chicago in 2011, 2012. And this came as a big surprise to the New York staff, who were having a lot of success, actually, with Onion News Network and, what they were doing with social media at that time and lots of other things. And so there was a huge battle. This was written about in the media at the time, actually. Although they didn't, the people who were writing about it didn't really, I don't think they knew the extent of what a serious rift this became, between the editorial and business staff. But there's a whole chapter in the book on this battle and a kind of rebellion that rose up among the staff, which ended up, I won't tell you what happened, but it was a big, big deal. And eventually, however, the editorial staff did move to Chicago, but they lost a good 85% of the writers who had made The Onion what it was, and they kind of restarted with a much smaller group of people in Chicago then.
This is also an excellent perspective on the history of online media. And we learn how much advertising cost back in the day when things were first getting started, and how much it costs today, and just the disparity in what is going on now compared to then.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, one of the examples is that early Onion News Network videos apparently were getting, this is when web video was a brand new thing. This was before smartphones, really, even. And they were getting like $80,000 for an ad for a 2-minute Onion News Network video, and then only a few years later they were lucky to get $800 for it, right? And when your business model is reliant on advertising revenue, that really creates a lot of problems. And again, The Onion was completely not alone in this. You know, many, many other website-based news organizations or media organizations went through a lot of the same problems. And some of them did go out of business. The Onion managed to hang on through all of that. And is hopefully coming back now in a different way, now that they have a different kind of ownership. So, you know, we'll see, I guess.
Well, it was pretty sad to read about the pressure that began to be exerted by the business side on the editorial side, where they were saying, well, you need to write a headline or an article that includes Cheetos or whatever.
Yeah, that was a big, big shock to me when I discovered that The Onion had been doing sponsored content, you know, advertorials. I mean, I was completely stunned by that. You know, as I say in the book, I had to actually, when the first person who told me that, I had to actually have them repeat it, because I was like, wait, I'm sorry, what? You know, like, it just went against everything that I've understood The Onion to be about. And not everybody had to do it, and not every article was. They still were doing good stuff. But at the time, that was, you know, one of the ways that they were able to get more advertising money to keep the organization going. So, you know, from the business point of view, we had to do this to keep the business happening, to pay you guys so that you can do anything at The Onion. But, you know, the editorial staff was like, you're sort of, you know, destroying the village to save it here, you know. This is not an Onion thing. So that was definitely an issue for a while, I think.
Well, there certainly were a lot of threats to the Onion over the years, and a lot of false things that didn't take place, like being bought out by Comedy Central or whatever.
Yeah.
Where in retrospect, you look back and you go, well, that was probably a good thing. And
yeah.
You also have some people who really were kind of visionary as far as keeping it going, like this mm-hmm. fella that had the, were they sub shops in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Pete Heise was one of the early, he was an ad salesman the first year I was there. And then he became one of the three co-owners of The Onion after Tim Keck and Chris Johnson sold it. And he, you know, he operated The Onion like a small Madison business, you know. And sometimes the writers had, you know, they had issues with him, they felt that he wasn't kind of seeing the potential of The Onion editorially. But it's interesting because one of the things that happened in the process of the book is that I realized that Pete was actually one of the most important people in the story because, mm-hmm. you know, because he kept the lights on, you know, he kept the writers paid. Were they making a lot of money? No, but he just kind of kept it going. And in a weird way, The Onion was really strong as like a local business, you know, that was sort of the model that was right for them in a weird way from a business point of view. You know, I mean, should The Onion even be a for-profit business? That's a totally different story. But yeah, I mean, Pete Heise was really important to the story of The Onion for sure.
He definitely got them through a period where they might not have survived. They might not have continued.
Yeah. I think that's correct, yeah.
My guest is Christine Wentz. Her book is Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News Satire. You alluded to the current Onion as we began the interview. Tell us what's been going on the last couple of years. You mentioned you might just stop writing the history after 2001, but then you continued. What's been going on recently?
Well, in 2024, just as I was finishing the book, and luckily, I mean, my publisher wasn't happy, but I was on an deadline extension at this point. The Onion was sold again to Zachary to change. It had been owned by a private equity firm or something before that. And was kind of, I think maybe it was kind of spiraling in a way, but they were purchased by a guy named Jeff Lawson, who had a lot of money from working from his tech company, and a new CEO named Ben Collins, who was a former NBC disinformation reporter, and their team of people bought The Onion, made it into an independent entity again, and with the goal of kind of ushering in a new wave of creativity and freedom for The Onion that would kind of release them from this so intensely advertising-focused paradigm to fund what they were doing. And luckily, I was able to get that into the manuscript, so there's a little bit of that. And I think it's really important since then, because one of the things they've done that got a lot of attention recently was purchase the site InfoWars from Alex Jones. That's not in the book. But when I saw that, I thought, that is the perfect thing for The Onion to do. It's kind of stepping into real life, you know? Now that real life and The Onion are indistinguishable a lot of the time, I just loved the idea that they were kind of taking the Onion kind of spirit and like bringing it into like a whole different kind of realm. And so I really hope they keep doing stuff like that and have the ability to keep doing things like that, because I thought that was brilliant. They also brought back the print edition, which I was very, very happy about, because, you know, I mean, I'm old school, but I think a lot of people agree with me that the Onion works was really brilliant as a print publication. And I think in some ways its brand of comedy just works really, you know, there's something about print that and the Onion that just work together really, really well. So I was really happy about that, too.
I agree. That InfoWars acquisition, didn't the kibosh get put on that?
Yeah, I mean, last I heard, there's some stuff that's tied up in court, and maybe it won't have, I guess there's still maybe a chance, but yeah, I mean, it's we'll see, but at least they tried, I don't think it's not completely over yet. Last I heard, but yeah, I mean, it maybe doesn't look good, but we'll see what happens. I just hope that they continue, having the bravery to do stuff like that again in the future. I think it's really important.
Another fascinating aspect of this is the political aspect and whether they were political and when maybe they became more political. Can we talk about mm-hmm. that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, different people at the Onion, disagree about, the political, kind of stance of the Onion. Is it political? Is it not? But I think that there are definitely, there's absolutely a spirit in the Onion that their satire is trying to make the world a better place, and they're doing that largely from a progressive point of view. They like to point their pens at people who are cruel and stupid, and greedy, and there's plenty of that happening in, certain parts of life these days. So, I think the Onion, if it's not so much making jokes, about politicians, although it does do that. I think the Onion's, sort of core spirit as satire is to point out what's wrong with society and try to make the world a better place. And that tends to take the shape of politics, especially lately. So, yeah.
One of my favorite writers is someone who was with the Onion for a long time. And he suffered from depression. And one of my favorite headlines in the Onion was one that he wrote about depressed people. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah. Depression hits losers hardest.
I love that headline. And I read that to someone, and they didn't get it. They're like, what's it supposed to mean?
Yeah. You have to be in the right frame of mind sometimes to get Onion headlines. But yeah. No, that's Todd Hanson, who was also someone I've known for a very long time. He's had very, very serious struggles with depression, but he's also, one of the most brilliant and hilarious people I've ever met. So sometimes those things seem to go together, but yeah.
You have another writer in there who gets a lot of credit for being brilliant. What was her name?
Carol Kolb.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about her.
Yeah, Carol Kolb is also from small town Wisconsin. Her dad literally worked at a cheese factory. Her parents, she's a first generation college student, and she just has a kind of surreal, kind of situationist performance art aspect to her comedy. She's also kind of the human interest story person in a lot of ways. So she was a writer for The Onion for a while and an editor, and she was also a head writer for The Onion News Network and was really, really substantially responsible for how brilliant The Onion News Network was in the 2010s. And she's since gone on to a TV writing career and has written for some pretty, pretty great shows, and I think is doing some other interesting stuff these days. But Carol is definitely like one of the great people in the history of The Onion for sure.
And when they went into creating videos, that whole period is pretty wild. It's amazing how productive they were.
Yeah. No, it was incredible. I've got a kid who's in film school right now, so I'm getting a little picture sometimes of just the sheer amount of work and coordination and just, you're not just a person sitting in a room with a notebook writing, I mean, you need an entire team to do something that's even a couple of minutes long. And just a truly spectacular amount of work. But, the Onion News Network is absolutely peak Onion, as Todd Hanson says at one point in the book. It was just brilliant in those days. And they've brought back ONN again, and so they're kind of getting some of that mojo back. But boy, there's some absolute classic Onion stuff from the 2010s, and some of it has millions and millions of views at this point, so I'm not the only one who feels that way, I think.
Well, back during the period when the Onion was first coming out, I was a big fan of the Dr. Demento show, and one of the artists I discovered on there was, of course, Weird Al Yankovic, and he's in your book, and I discovered something really strange about him and how one of the writers got mad at him, and this was bizarre.
So what happened was the guy who wrote the horoscopes, John Crewson, who was another legendary Onion writer, if anything, any multi-layered pun on the front page is almost always written by John Crewson from the 90s. I'm just absolute brilliant writer. But he also wrote the horoscopes. Weird Al Yankovic made a song that was based in part on Onion horoscopes. He did thank the Onion in the liner notes of the record. But somehow Crewson, was offended by this instead of flattered by it. And he wrote a rather tasteless article about that referred to Weird Al's parents dying tragically in a carbon monoxide accident, something that actually had happened, which was really definitely one of the times that the Onion has stepped over the line. There's been a few times, in my opinion, where that has happened, and this was absolutely one of them. And in the course of writing the book, though, I talked to Crewson, and he was like, this was terrible. Why did I do that? That was a horrible thing to do. But I also did an email interview with Weird Al, in part because I wanted to ask him about this. And so in the process, I sort of brokered this apology between John Crewson and Weird Al, which was kind of not something I ever thought I would do in my life. But Weird Al is very gracious and like a really nice person who's like been on the Onion side for a long time. So he said he wasn't upset about it. He understood that's what the Onion did, and Crewson said he was really sorry. And so it all worked out okay, I think. That was a really interesting story that I did not know about either until I started, digging into this project. So
well, it made me really get a new respect for Weird Al. And just what a forgiving man he is. It's just amazing.
Yeah. He just seems like a really good guy.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, the book's been out for a couple of weeks. What kind of a response are you getting? What kind of reaction?
I'm getting an extremely good response. In Madison, my opening night event at a place called Arts and Literature Lab here in town was standing room only. There were more than 200 people there. They were turning people away. The bookstore that was selling sold out of all the books. And, other events I've been to have also had tons of people. There's been a couple of great reviews. There's a really good one on Bloomberg. The New York Times reviewed it. The New York Times included it as one of 21 nonfiction books to look out for this spring, which I was really excited about because I wasn't expecting that. So the reception has been fantastic. I couldn't be happier, really. So, yeah.
I saw the thing in the Times, and I thought, uh-oh, she's in the Times. I'm never going to get an interview with her.
You were on the agenda a long time ago, though, because Joe Garden recommended you, so I was like, I have to do it. And plus, I love Ohio. I've got to know some good people from Ohio in public radio, so yeah, I have to do it.
Christine, that's why every time I sent you an email, I always included Joe's name in the subject line. I'm just kidding.
No, I wouldn't forget. I knew it was you.
Okay. Hey, well, we really appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you about The Onion.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
My guest has been Christine Wentz. Her book is Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News Satire. You heard about it on the Book Nook. It's not April Fool's Day, but it is April. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening.